Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 392. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about indigenous peoples, spectacular mountains, and one unexpected bullfight as we go trekking in Ecuador. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. We don't have a sponsor for this week's episode, but if you want to sponsor the Amateur Traveler, next time your ad could go right here. Don't have any news stories for you this week, but I do have some news about the show that is significant to a number of you, and that is that the days of the iTunes enhanced version of the show with pictures and links may be limited. It turns out the new version of GarageBand, which is what I use for creating this show, doesn't support them anymore. And so I'm looking at alternatives, but it's likely that here in the, over the course of the next month, the show will go to one version only, the MP3 version. And so with no other news, let's go into the interview. I'd like to welcome back to the show Kim Mance, freelance travel writer and blogger, and come to talk to us about Ecuador. Kim, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me back.
And I say welcome back. I think you've been on the show just one time, but talking about doing a pony trek in Lesotho, so that should count for two.
It was epic.
And it sounded like this was also an adventure travel sort of trip.
Yeah, I tend that way.
Well, excellent. Let's put Ecuador on a map, first of all, for the few people who may be listening who are geography challenged.
It's in South America. And it was actually my first time to South America, so I kind of thought I'll work my way a little bit from north to south. It's not completely northerly on that continent, but it's toward the top there, and it's little. It's very little.
And strangely enough, it is right on the equator.
It is. I don't know why they called it Ecuador, but yeah.
Excellent. And what did you do, and what do you recommend for a trip to Ecuador?
I actually bought a one-way ticket because I wasn't sure how long I wanted to spend there. But I ended up spending about 3.5 weeks. And a definite highlight was a little over a week that I spent on the Quillotoa Loop, which is right in the Andes Mountains, just south of Quito, the capital city.
And that is a hike trekking loop, I'm assuming?
People do it different ways. And when I was researching it before I left the States, I was kind of deciding on which options I'd take. Some people take, they'll rent a car and do it because there's actually a road, part of it's dirt, but you can make it around this loop, which is a loop of indigenous villages way high in the mountains. You could also hop on public transportation. There are really good buses that go all through Ecuador. And it's actually kind of interesting because they charge you, it's a dollarized economy. So okay. They actually use the American dollar. So it's $1 an hour for the bus.
Oh, interesting.
So you kind of know how long your bus ride is supposed to take too. Because if it charges you $2, you go, okay, that's supposed to be about a 2-hour ride.
Now, of course, I'm going to be very disappointed after your Lesotho trip if you didn't do this by llama.
Yes, I had two llamas. Actually, I stood on them, 1 foot on each. Now, you can hike it or walk it. You can rent a horse, or you can hop on the back of like a milk truck or a fruit truck of people running goods out to the different markets in the different villages. So actually what I did was a combination of all of those methods, except for the rental car.
Okay. And you did that because you wanted to try different modes of transport, or it just so happened that it worked out that it was better to take the bus from this town to this town and easier to hop on a horse to the next one?
It was a little bit of a combination of both of those. I left my mind open as to what I was going to do, but I had it in my head that I was going to do mostly hiking or horseback. But once I got there, it was kind of, I saw this fruit truck passing by and I thought, oh, why not? They're going to let me hitchhike on the back of an orange truck. I might as well. And also the first couple of days, I went to Quito for 2 days to try and acclimatize because it's the second highest elevated capital city in South America, second to Bolivia's capital city. And so you're up above 10,000 feet to start off with. So you want to get acclimatized. And so I was still a little bit rough around the edges my first day at the hike. So that was the day I hopped a fruit truck.
Okay. And why did you go there? What is there to see and do in that loop, in those villages?
I did a lot of pre-research using guidebooks and online stuff and looking at blogs to see which ones I wanted to go to. And it kind of turned out I wanted to go to all of them. There are five or six villages that form this loop. And so you start out in a town called Latacunga, and then you can go either way around the loop. And so I planned it so that I would hit as many markets as I could. So there was a Saturday market in a village called Zumbawa. And then there was another market on Thursday. So I tried to time it so that I could hit as many local events as possible. And then I looked upon some festivals that were going on. But it's really interesting because it's all of the local indigenous culture. So the people who were there before the conquistadors landed have carried on a lot of their festivals and traditions.
Excellent. And when you say markets, are we talking predominantly food markets at that point?
They're actually really mixed. There are food markets, and then on the other side of it, there'll be animal markets, and where they're actually doing the auctioning off of sheep and pigs and cows. It was funny because first one I went to that was the big animal market actually had, you could see people walking along with these huge sort of nylon bags that you kind of maybe would see huge amounts of rice or things like that in. But they were holding them, and then the bag would suddenly start moving all around. And you could get a little closer, and this one couple had been carrying their bag, and then they opened it up, and I looked inside, and there were three little piglets in there. And so they were literally going around, you know, picking up chickens and things like that, putting them in the bags, and then carrying them on the bus home. So that was interesting, and it was a very vibrant thing to see.
Well, and that answered my other question, is when you talk about the bus tour, I was assuming we were talking the second class buses, the chicken buses, rather than some of the high-end first class buses that also go through South America.
All the buses in Ecuador are marked with their destination, and they'll pick you up anywhere you are. And so you don't have to make it to a bus station or a stop. If you're on the side of the Pan American Highway and have your arm out when you see the bus that you want to get on, they'll pull over and stop. And the same goes with the mountains. You can actually upgrade to what they call executive class, and for maybe like 50 cents more or so. And then if the air conditioning is working, you get air conditioning, and the bus is in a little better shape. But none of the buses were really super run down or anything. They were all pretty comfortable, actually.
When you do executive class, your pig gets its own seat. Is that really what we're talking about? Or
there was a lady with a bag of kittens that got on one, and then several people getting out after the market in Latacunga, they were unloading, and they were unloading all kinds of animals from the cargo compartment down below. So I'm not sure how the animals felt very comfortable or not, but I doubt it.
You did a lot of research ahead of time. Now that you have been there, what do you think that the guidebooks got right, and what do you think they got wrong?
The guidebooks actually got most of what I read right. There were very brief descriptions about the different villages, but it was a really good overview and accurate descriptions and things like that. What could have been a little more helpful would have been a better timetable for different buses that came through. But I'm sure those change all the time. So as far as what they could get right, I think that they did a really good job. And then the blogs that I looked at had a lot more information on like what it felt like and what it looked like. And so I could really make sure that's where I wanted to spend my time.
What did it feel like and what did it look like?
It was kind of stunning. I mean, going down from Quito, I took the bus, and it was about an hour and a half ride to the jumping off point in the loop. And you do go down a stretch of the Pan American Highway. And so you're getting out of this really big city that sprawls out for just miles and miles into beautiful highlands with gorgeous rolling hills and cows grazing on the sides of the hills and little towns and villages that you're passing through. And the Latacunga itself is not too much to speak of. But then once you do get on a bus, but the views as you're entering are just exactly what you would hope for. When visiting the South American Andes, they were just gorgeous, gorgeous peaks all around. And you're careening over these really high passes and coming down into beautiful valleys. And it's about a 2.5 hour ride to the first village from Latacunga. But I did, as I say, hop off the bus and did a little hike to a posada and a working dairy farm. And so it was absolutely gorgeous. The peaks look like those dollops of fresh whipped cream that you put on top of like strawberry shortcake, just these really cool craggy peaks that aren't similar to the Colorado Rockies.
And were the different villages different from each other? Did they have a noticeable difference in character or in what there was to see there?
The villages were actually a lot different from each other just because some were in a valley and some were on a hillside and things like that. But the people groups were very similar. But the villages themselves varied both in size and landscape and things. So it gave a very different feel to it. The very first one I went to, Zumbawa, because I was going to their market the next morning. So I'd stayed in the posada, then I did a bit of a hike, and then I hopped on the back of a fruit truck and ended up in Zumbawa a little earlier than I'd planned because I got on the truck. And it was the sleepiest little kind of, it almost felt like the Old West or something, just this very quiet, quiet village with a stunning backdrop. And I was going, wow, there's not going to be a lot to do before the market in the morning. And I went and had some lunch. And then all of a sudden, I looked in the town square that had been pretty quiet with hardly anyone around. And these literal truckloads of people started showing up. And they were all dressed with the indigenous people there wear these alpaca wool sort of ponchos. And then they wear these kind of fedora looking hats. And with a feather in it, and the women wear this really, it looks kind of gaudy or something, but it looks great the way they wear it, gold jewelry and little shoes and skirts and tights. So truckloads, literal truckloads of people just start showing up in the middle of the plaza. And I was like, well, this is interesting. And they all hop out and start walking down the hill. And that was the only part of the area I hadn't explored around on foot already. So I just followed them down. And then there was this makeshift bull fighting ring that they all were going to with stacks and stacks and stacks of cartons of beer. And it turned out I'd happened upon a big festival that they were having. And so all the surrounding villages were trucking in people. And then they spent the next several hours taunting a bull. They didn't really fight it or do anything with it as they got progressively more drunk. So by 4 p.m., the entire village is just sloshed. It was hilarious.
Okay, so that's a different way to do bullfighting that I haven't seen before.
It definitely couldn't. I just called it bull taunting.
And so the bull walks away at the end of the event.
Yes, okay. And they had several bulls in another separate little pen. And so when the one bull would get tired of chasing after people or goring them, as it were, then they would just bring out another one.
Okay, so this is like some of the bullfights where basically the bull makes it out, but the people who are trying to show their bravery don't necessarily make it out.
Yeah, they did really well until maybe the last hour, and they were really, really drunk. And so one guy got pretty bloodily gore. He seemed fine. He actually got up and walked away, but he was kind of real bloody. And some of them would actually dress up. They had these special outfits, but they'd stuff it all with straw. And so they looked like a huge scarecrow or something, and they would go and let the bull gore them. And I'm going, what if it got you in the head? But yeah, they were having a good time.
Huh. Okay. And did you know, you said you ahead of time looked at a couple different festivals. Are there festivals, this one obviously caught you by surprise, but are there other ones that are on blogs or on websites or whatever?
Yes, definitely. And I didn't see any during the time frame I was visiting, so I thought I had missed out. But apparently there were also secret festivals that aren't published yet.
Okay. Not intended for the tourists.
Right. Yeah, not at all. I saw an Australian couple while I was there, and we kind of somehow gravitated towards each other. But that was it for tourists.
And then you're getting by in Spanish predominantly during this trip?
Yeah, and my Spanish is not good. It's a lot better now after spending almost a month in Ecuador. But yeah, it was all Spanish. There wasn't much English at all going on. So it was a good what do you call that? Immersion course? Immersion.
Sure, right. What surprised you? You'd done a lot of research ahead of time, so you were completely prepared.
Yeah. What surprised me was, well, the climate. I probably could have packed a couple extra layers. I'd done a pretty good job, but it really got cold up there, even though It wasn't snowing. I was there in June, and it's right on the equator, and everyone said, oh, Ecuador is so temperate. But if you do go up to that elevation, it's going to be pretty cold. I was also really surprised I figured people would be pretty friendly because everyone's referenced just the friendliness of the Ecuadorians. But especially the indigenous people, I was really shocked at just how welcoming they were. At first, they'd be a little bit formal, and then they were just really, really sweet, but also extremely hardy. So some of these hikes, I'd be going 5 or 6 hours, and I'd get passed by like a 90-year-old woman. And so they were, and she was just going to wherever, you know, the market for a day and overnighting maybe and coming back. But yeah, they literally were really, really fit people.
We have to give them some credit if they've lived there their whole lives. They get a little more used to the altitude, I'm sure, than you did.
Yeah.
And then because it's an indigenous culture, how are things different? How is the food different? How are the customs different, for instance, than what you would see when you were in Quito?
The food was actually really different all over Ecuador. So in Quito, there were very specialized sort of soups. They were really into soups, which actually a lot of Ecuador is really into soups, it seems. But the soups would change. So then instead of a potato puree soup in Quito, there would be a quinoa sort of soup that they were serving there. Or instead of the puree, it would be the chunks of potato. And then a few of the side dishes seem to be more along indigenous tradition versus main dishes. It seems like things have kind of spread around, and mainly because they're producing a lot of produce and stuff to sell to non-indigenous communities too. Maybe they've kind of merged their culinary tastes. But
well, and you mentioned quinoa. I mean, that sounds like they're doing all the latest things. But that, of course, is an indigenous part of the indigenous diet.
Yeah, you can get an entire meal and a beer for like $4 for dinner. So I'm sitting there eating a $2 lunch in Zimbabwe and got a quinoa soup. And I was going, you know, you could charge like $10 for this in Brooklyn.
It's very trendy, but of course, also very ancient.
Theirs did taste better than any quinoa I've had in the States. I don't think we've quite got that figured out yet.
Well, it's probably a little fresher for one thing.
Yeah.
What was the day or the moment that stands out where you thought, this was a really good idea? I'm really glad I did this.
The very first moment I stepped off the bus and headed towards a hike to the Posada, it was just the clouds are kind of moving over you and how they do and cast shadows on the different little mountain tops that are surrounding. And I literally as soon as I did that, I thought, yeah, this was a very good idea. And I was very much looking forward to the rest of the week.
And was there a moment where you thought, this was a really bad idea, and I'm so sorry I did this?
Yeah, I was actually on my way out leaving and got totally lost on one of the trails. And
oh, no. Okay.
I just sat down and went, yeah, I'm in the middle of nowhere. There's really not really anything I can do except for either hike backwards like 2 hours and see if I can figure out what turn I missed, or keep going and see what I run into.
And what did you do?
Well, I started to cross this river to kind of go with the ladder, might as well explore. And I mean, there were every now and then farms and things. So if it got too bad, I figured, you know, I could figure out directions or something. And so I started going, and then these two guys were coming by with horses. They were riding horses. And I asked them which way was the village I wanted to go to and which way was the way back. And they kind of said it was basically equidistant, but that it was going to be much harder to get to where I was going, the way I was going. And so then one of them said, here, I'm getting off here anyway because he's going to hike to his farm. Why don't you have my horse? And so I ended up following the guy on his horse. It was just hilarious. They just ended up getting, and the guy was on a white horse, by the way. So I got rescued by a guy on a white horse. It was awesome.
All right. Here's a question for you. Standing at the prettiest spot you saw, where are you standing and what are you looking at?
God, every day it would change too, because I would go, oh, this is even better than yesterday. Or definitely it would be those solitary moments where you're just out in the middle of nowhere and standing and can kind of look down over through some valleys and things. But there is one village that is kind of the namesake of the loop. It is called Quilotoa, the village. Mm-hmm. And it's the most popular one. And people even sometimes do day trips from Quito because it is only an hour and a half to that first port city. And then it's maybe 3 hours. So some people actually do, they'll hire a car or whatever, go in there and then come back out because it's a huge lagoon. They call it Laguna Quilotoa. And it is, I don't know the surface area of it, but it's this bright blue, beautiful, beautiful lagoon. And it's hanging, basically. It's almost like one of those hanging lakes or something. So it's in a crater. It's inside of a crater. So it's just surrounded on all sides by these steep hills going up to a very pointy ridge. And then you can hike down to it. And so, first of all, the view looking down at it is gorgeous. And then you can hike down to the bottom and sit and put your feet in it and things like that. You can even canoe. There's some little canoes you can rent and go out on the lagoon. It was gorgeous.
Excellent. And I don't know if you can top the man rescuing you on the white horse, but who is the most memorable local that you met?
Probably one of the little ladies that passed me on the trail. She was so excited to see someone. And I think she must have been with her husband or some relative that was similar age. And he kept hiking and she just stopped and started chatting me up in the most rapid fire Spanish. But it's kind of this interesting Spanish because the indigenous people, that's not their first language. Mm-hmm. So sometimes their Spanish sounds totally impossible to understand. And so she was doing that for probably like 3 or 4 minutes. And she was telling me what I gathered about her hike so far and like what her plans were. And she was so happy to chat with somebody that she stopped in the middle of the trail. We're just kind of like on this little, so the funniest part of it was because I was on the edge of a little tiny pass that was barely wide enough for your hips to go through.
Oh my.
And without the edge going down. So she's literally standing kind of behind and I have my body up against a rock, just kind of leaning there while she's chatting me up. And we're just on a cliff face. You know, it was really hilarious.
Okay. Don't get a lot of neighbors out
that
part.
That was a good memorable. No, it doesn't sound like it.
What do you wish you had known before you went?
Something I didn't catch, which I still couldn't find it when I went back, but it seems like the European guidebooks had very clearly put it in there, was that they pulled out smaller packs and they didn't actually carry their big pack all the way around the loop. I probably would have done a little more hiking if I hadn't had my full pack.
Oh, got it. Okay.
There were places in La Jacunga that you could store it. And so you could store your big pack. They would keep it safe for you, but you can have a smaller pack out. And that made a lot of sense, especially by like day two. I was like, dang, I wish I had stored my pack.
When did you feel closest to home, most familiar, and when did you feel furthest from home? Toto, we're not in Kansas anymore.
Yeah, exactly. Probably when I felt closest to home was the very last day that I was on the hike. The last village I stopped in was Isin Levi, and I stayed at a gorgeous, gorgeous hostel called Yuyuyama, and it looks like Lululama. Mm-hmm. And that was the first time I saw some Americans. So there were some Americans checking out when I got there, and then that night another American girl came in. So that was, I had been hanging out with only Europeans along the way if I was hiking with somebody or chatting with people at the different lodges along the way. It had all been people from Europe. There was a really cool girl I met from Singapore and other places, but they weren't Americans. So I guess maybe we could have a little more of a way that we were relating to each other. She was also from living in New York. Mm-hmm. And the farthest from home, pretty much all the rest of the time. It was really far out there.
Before somebody follows in your footsteps, one thing that they should remember to put in their pack.
2 extra layers of clothing, even okay. If you're going in the summer, because it definitely gets really cold and really, really windy up on the actual village of Kealotoa. And I had read ahead, they call themselves hostels, but they're B&Bs with family style dinners. Mm-hmm. So by the way, all the places I stayed, I never paid more than $18 a night, including 2 meals on the loop.
Wow.
So it was really affordable. And they were very, very nice. They weren't the shared bathroom, like dorm style hostels. You had your own room. Most of the places I had my own bathroom.
I'm guessing not with high-speed internet connections, though.
No, not at all, actually. non-existent there. Then a lot of them advertised, or like they would say in the guidebooks or the ones I read online, said that they had wood stoves. And so I was like, oh, it'll be nice and toasty at night. But it was still really, really cold. And especially when it burned out in the middle of the night kind of thing. And they didn't give you that much wood because they're up in the middle of nowhere and they have to truck it all up there. So it was cold at night, especially.
Now, you are the equator, so you said June, and I immediately was thinking summer, but of course, that's really not the right term. So how did you pick which time of year you went?
I just wanted to go.
Okay.
So, and it seemed like a reasonable time to go, time of year.
In your research, did you see that there was any differentiation? Don't go, the rains come in whatever month, or...
Yeah, there were definitely different seasons. And for the loop, or if you're going anywhere up high, a lot of people going on the loop were acclimatizing to hike Cotopaxi, which is a really big peak there. And a lot of people were doing that afterward. And so this time frame I was in was actually the very beginning of the high season. So it was still a little bit low. And then toward the end of the week, actually more and more people were starting to show up because they were getting more ready for going up Cotopaxi as well.
Excellent. Anything else we should know before we go to Ecuador?
Yeah, I mean, study up on the Spanish because there's not a lot of English happening. And also don't be afraid to take the buses because that was definitely the most convenient form of transportation. I went and met a couple of other blogger friends on the coast and we went to the beach for a week. I went to some other cities and I always took the buses. It was totally painless and really, really cheap. And they're actually running very regularly. So don't be afraid of that.
Excellent. One thing that makes you laugh and say only in Ecuador.
Yeah, I would probably have to say those like pigs and chickens and guinea pigs, by the way, because they eat guinea pigs in bags and people just carrying around bags of live animals. I've not really seen that much.
Excellent. And finish the sentence. You really know you're in Ecuador. When what?
Yeah, you really know you're in Ecuador. And this wasn't on the loop, but when you're in a hotel where you have a nice clean room, a veranda and a bathroom on the beach, literally on the sand, and you only have to pay $10 a night.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Well, I believe I can hear the sound of people Googling for flights at this point. Right. So excellent. And if you had to summarize the part of Ecuador that you saw, let's just focus in on that in three words. What three words would you use?
Challenging, satisfying, and addicting. I want to go back.
And the challenging and the satisfying are related to one another?
Yeah, just because you're challenging the elements a bit. It's not the easiest thing to go out in the middle of nowhere. It's not a difficult trek by any means. Most of it's pretty easy. There's some little bit of climbing involved, but then it is extremely satisfying to get all the way out there. And a lot of it, because I'd done a lot of research to actually see the things that I really had wanted to see, was very satisfying. And yeah, and you feel accomplished to kind of do the hikes and things like that.
Excellent. And just to clarify, you weren't challenging the bull.
I did not challenge the bull, especially after a couple people got gored.
Kim, where can people read more about your travels?
I hang out on Twitter a lot, Kim Mance, just my name. And then also KimMance.com keeps up with the various activities that I do.
Because you're writing all over the place now.
Yeah.
Excellent. Thanks so much for coming back on the show. I look forward to you coming back on again with some other unusual adventure.
Good. I look forward to it. I'll have to come up with something.
I got an email a while back and I forgot to read it to you. We had a guest on the show, Gerhard, who talked to us about Vienna, who was, as you recall, the curator of a museum called the Third Man Museum in Vienna, small museum. And he sent me an email the next week after he was on the show and said, believe it or not, we had three visitors in our museum yesterday because of your radio show. One single traveler who had downloaded it on his iPhone and listened to it on the airplane, and a young couple from the U.S., all three loved the museum and your show, and we really had fun together. Thank you, Chris, and thank you, Vienna Tourism Board, for connecting us. Many greetings from Vienna, and hopefully we once meet in person. Gerhard. If you do go places that you heard about in the Amateur Traveler, don't forget to tell people where you heard about them, because they may enjoy it, as Gerhard did. With that, we're going to end this episode of The Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, feel free to send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com or leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. You can join the Facebook community or follow me on Twitter @Chris2X. And as always, thanks so much for listening.